Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
When a community is threatened by an active shooter, the training of our first responders can be a matter of life and death. Let's go in depth with Michael Morgenstern, Gene Norton, and Rich Severance with GTI. What's GTI?
Government Training Institute, and they are a company, or we are a company, that provides training for military and law enforcement in the U.S. and abroad, U.S. territories, in the way of SWAT. There's type SWAT classes, there's immediate action, which is response to active shooter. The course that we're doing now is Rescue Task Force. Those are a few courses, for example.
I presume you guys bring a variety of expertise.
Oh, yeah. Military police background for me, with the focus in protection and SWAT.
Firefighting for me, a battalion chief with Orange County Fire in California for 27 years.
Retired firefighter EMS out of the city of Wilmington, Delaware, with 30 years experience.
And where do you all live?
I live in Wilmington, Delaware.
Augusta, Georgia.
California.
Do you guys do this? Well, you don't do it full-time then, do you? Because
no,
you
sir.
Said that you have other positions in firefighting, EMS.
So, yeah, we're I think we're all adjunct at this point, adjunct instructors, meaning that we are contracted to do whatever course is laid on that we're going to train. And then, you know, when that opportunity arises again or there's a need for an instructor, they reach out and we take those classes as they're available to instruct them.
So GTI comes in and they have subject matter experts in whatever they're teaching, whether it's on the SWAT side or, in this case, rescue task forces. They blend the subject matter experts with the courses, and they provide training for the local government on the law and on the fire side, in this case, for rescue task forces. So they have a wealth of instructors in their repertoire, and it blends them together to meet the need of the course and meet a need of the course of the person that's actually contracting with us.
And so it could get pretty darn specific then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's tailored to what our expertise is and what classes mm-hmm. we're going to teach.
And what are you teaching? Well, here for a few days here in Knoxville, and we're in the Old East Elementary School. What are you teaching?
So the Rescue Task Force is the course that we're teaching, and that basically teaches first responders the combination of police elements, fire, and EMS elements, how to go in after a threat has been either neutralized or pinned down someplace where, instead of waiting for the whole situation to end, we can work together, focus out of a central command, and get all of these elements to where police can escort in rescue folks to come in and start taking care of casualties as soon as possible. So that is the focus of the course.
Okay, so can you lay out some of the basics of what you want to get across during this lesson?
So having a rescue task force requires multi-disciplines, right? In this case, disciplines meaning the fire and the law parameters as well. So as we go in, the multi-disciplines work together in conjunction under a unified command. They go in with force protection and they evacuate citizens and victims that have been hurt during an active shooter incident. Now you could take it back to Columbine, you could look at Virginia Tech, you could look at some of the Fort Hood shooting. So those are the kind of catalysts that have started this program, and understanding that the public, not only the public, but also law and fire, understand the need to get EMS personnel and to save lives. While law does a great job of neutralizing the victim, whether it's either he puts himself down, law puts him down, or they take him into custody, there's still victims inside that the building is not clear yet. Fire and EMS have stepped up with law enforcement under force protection to provide that rescue, to give those people a chance that have gunshot wounds, to get them extricated out and to local trauma centers where they could survive their wounds.
So you might have a situation where you still have the bad guy in the building, but enough the building is free that you have victims laying around that you want to make it so the EMS personnel can get in safely and still...
Yeah, once law enforcement goes in, they start clearing areas. And as they clear the areas or pin down our subject, EMS and force protection start working towards the victims, collect them, and get them out as fast as possible. That's what this is about.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about Rescue Task Force training with Michael Morgenstern, Gene Norton, and Rich Severance with GTI. So how do you know that the situation is secure enough that you can bring in the personnel? Well,
there's certain points where the unified command that he spoke of, everybody's traffic gets pushed there, and that's kind of driving the train. So the unified command is taking note of what sections, what sectors, hallways, different places that have had officers in them, and to what degree that they're clear. So as soon as they know, hey, you know, we have a certain corridor that is clear at this point to the standard that they need to send in the task force, then they can start at that point.
Okay, and so what do you mean by unified command?
So unified command is basically you have two separate disciplines in this case with fire and law. And when they push out information, the common goal is to have common objectives, right? And in an active shooter situation, it's obviously to stop the act of violence, right? And then the other section is to rescue the victims that have been injured by the person that's conducting the violence. Having a unified command with a law enforcement officer and a fire or slash EMS officer outside, orchestrating, having common objectives together to mobilize the forces to go downrange. So they talk to each other, they come up with common objectives, and they use the resources on each side of the discipline to execute those objectives.
Okay, so the law enforcement might say, okay, the east wing is clear, now you can send in EMS.
We do under force protection, because a building this size, if we're using East Elementary as an example, a building this size may take hours to clear with law enforcement. We don't have hours to wait to get victims out that are bleeding to death. So with under force protection, meaning we're taking fire EMS medics, segment of that, and with law enforcement as force protection, providing protection for them, we're moving into the building when it hasn't been 100% clear yet, and now allowing the medics to render aid and care to victims that have been injured.
Under the protection of the officers that they came in with, which those officers are separate from the initial response.
Okay, and so these officers get out in front and say, okay, come on here, follow me, stay low, whatever they need to say.
It's a new world for fire service, and actually a new world for police. We always used to work separately. They did their thing, we did ours. Now we're going to combine both entities, come up with a common goal, and drive towards that goal to get accomplished quickly. So when we initially show up, the police are in charge. They take charge of clearing the building. Fire and police get together, make their goals up under the unified command umbrella. Then we set up our rescue task force, which are a combination of EMS, fire, and police officers. They'll go in together, and the police officers will protect the firefighters while we're making our way to victims.
Now, it seems to me that there still has to be a top dog, a person that is ultimately in charge, no?
No, in a unified command, everybody is, the two people that are in unified command or however many people in our command are stakeholders. In this case, law and fire, both are stakeholders in this venue. So they both make decisions based on the law officer makes decisions based on the law, law resources, and the fire makes decisions based on the fire EMS side. They come together, they marry those two together, and they come up with their common objectives. And when their common objectives put out, both those guys are in charge. One's in charge of the law element, one's in charge of the fire element, but one doesn't supersede the other. They both have a stakehold in this, and they both make decisions together for the base of the common good, which in this case is to A, make sure the threat is neutralized or taken into custody, and B, making sure the victims that are injured during this threat are taken out to the hospital, and they work conjunctly together. The definition of a task force is two different disciplines or two separate pieces of equipment coming together with one leader and moving forward.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about Rescue Task Force training with Michael Morgenstern, Gene Norton, and Rich Severance with GTI. But what if there's a disagreement?
There should be no disagreements, because our objectives are clear. Our objectives are clear is we cannot go and rescue victims until the threat is taken away, right? Whether, again, either he self-inflicts himself, law enforcement takes him into custody, or they barricade him, right? So those are the three elements. So once that is done, then EMS comes in and does their thing with force protection. And so the objectives are going to be the same no matter what type of incident you roll to when it comes to an active shooter. Those objectives are for to stop the deadly threat and to rescue the victims and get them to a hospital.
And so this is why you're working together, so that the that in a situation they have, you know, maybe they've spoken before, but they've never gone through the training. Now they'll have the practice. They'll know what to do. Yes. That's the purpose.
Absolutely.
Right. And it's the communication piece, right? So because we don't work with each other on a daily basis, law and fire operate on separate frequencies. We have our own goals. We have our own objectives based on their disciplines, right? This brings them together and allows them to communicate with each other prior to an event and work out any ideas they have or confusion they have together. They can work it out together out here when communicating. So pushing out law information, pushing out fire information or EMS information, they talk, they come up with objectives, and then they push it forward, and then they translate it out to everybody else.
How does it work practically? I'm presuming law enforcement is most often first on scene. I guess not always, but in an active shooter kind of thing, law enforcement should be on scene first. When they arrive on scene and they know that they're victims, do they then tell fire to stage off-site? How does that work?
So when law enforcement shows up on scene, their primary goal is obviously to stop the threat of violence. They're going to send as many law enforcement officers as they need to go stop the threat of violence. Once they have a sufficient officers inside, then they'll start backfilling with EMS, with rescue task forces. And so at that time, that's where unified command comes in and they make decisions together. So yes, law enforcement does respond first. The fire does stage out until there is unified command, and that way we could talk with their frequencies.
I think to your point, sir, is that when the incident occurs, law enforcement, yes, may be here first in most cases. However, the senior ranking person, once there's enough, if it's only law enforcement that shows up and you have 5 to 6 officers in the building, and now a supervisor for law enforcement shows up, they may not necessarily need that gun in the fight. So they will assume that incident command until such time that they become unified with fire, with EMS, to do staging points to say, okay, now I'm going to orchestrate this from out here as a supervisor. I'm going to communicate what my officers are doing inside. I'm going to relay that to my counterparts as they show up, whether it's medical or fire, and then pick those two leaders, those two supervisors, to come together at that unified command and then start staging areas. What standoff we need, what other resources that we need. And those things are going to come together kind of on that supervisor level once we have enough people on the law enforcement side to start to negotiate or start to locate and try to eliminate the threat.
Now, this might seem to our listeners that I'm getting in the weeds a little bit with this, but fire and police aren't always on the same frequencies. Is that an issue? Is there always a frequency that they go to?
No, it's not an issue. If they have a common frequency, that would be nice. But in most jurisdictions across the United States, they're not on the same frequency. And that's okay, because in unified command, the law commander and the fire commander are standing toe-to-toe with each other with their radios out so we could listen to each other's traffic. So when law enforcement personnel that are downrange push out information to the command post, me as a fire commander can sit there and listen to what's going on with his radio, and then I can anticipate their needs for victims. And I could get them with my dispatch and order the appropriate resources. In addition to having fire EMS go in with force protection, we're also showing that law enforcement, once the hunt is over or once the suspect has been, the threat of violence has stopped, we're showing the officers that they can now turn and render aid as well with tourniquets, with whatever they have, IFACs, individual first aid kits, and there we're teaching that as well, is that they could start rendering aid until we could actually bring fire or EMS into the scene.
And I'm presuming that it's not until everybody's safe and out of there that it becomes a crime scene. Is that right?
It's a crime.
It's treated as a crime scene regardless. You have to exercise as much care as you can to preserve the scene, but the priority is immediately to stop the threat. So for instance, once you have the shooter in a room and he's down, whether that was self-inflicted or the officers took him down, then you do need to pay a little bit more attention and use some extra caution at that point. But the crime scene aspect does not limit or negate the fact that the officers have to do what they need to do to stop the threat. So the same thing comes with the rescue task force side, and one of the things that Mike touches on with the rescue guys, with the EMS and with the fire, is to treat, because by the time the rescue task force comes in, things are relatively calm where they're going to, so they do have to exercise that care and, you know, not just blatantly kind of disrupt the scene. You know, they do have to exercise that care as they would on any other call.
Now, looking around
at the group I've seen from our area, and I apologize if I'm missing somebody, but Knoxville PD, Pella PD, Marion County Sheriff, Clay Township, Knoxville Township Rural Fire Department, Pella Ambulance, Knoxville Fire and Rescue, Pleasantville, and Marion County Emergency Management, and beyond. I mean, those are the ones that I remember seeing. And that's a lot of people. How are they doing? How are they doing in the training?
So yesterday was all introduction to the Rescue Task Force concept, and it was a lot of classroom. Today, just before lunch, we actually started the walking phase. So we've actually walked them through what our expectations are and how this is supposed to play out. They've done very well. They've adapted. They're already aware of Unified Command and already Incident Command. It's just working them together in a different type of incident. They've done well marrying them up with a rescue task force configuration. They're able to communicate with each other at the boots on the ground level, which is the officer and the EMT or the paramedic walking in together. The communication is the key to this whole thing. We can't function any of this. We can't do any of this without good communication between both disciplines, fire and law. And once that communication is put in play, we could conquer anything. And that's what we're doing right now, is doing the communication piece, and they're doing very well. We did this 7 classes last year in the northern part of Iowa, and throughout those classes, the biggest takeaway for most of this is the law enforcement and the fire EMS portion were able to walk out of there hand in hand, shake hands, get to know each other, have good communication with each other when they walked out the door for the last day of class, and they build those relationships, because relationships start in this classroom. That way, when they go on scene, that's the first time they've met that officer or their EMT, and they already have that recognition, and the communication basis is there.
Any other thing that I didn't know enough to ask that's important to share?
Well, I think one of the big things is, and we talked about this, was the group we have here now be able to take this back with them to their departments, to their ambulances and their EMS personnel, and actually spread the word and share their experience. And hopefully more people will be interested in this, and we can continue on teaching more of this and have more people on board with all this training.
I would say the main takeaway for your listeners or your audience that may be out there hearing this, that are in one of these professions, whether it be law enforcement, firefighting, or EMS, that if they're interested in the training, they get the opportunity to do the training, it's critical that it doesn't stop here on the last day of class. This is something that needs to be exercised on a semi-regular basis between all the entities coming back together and fine-tuning what they've learned and just refreshing. It will become a perishable skill set if they don't do that.
Thanks to Michael Morgenstern, Gene Norton, and Rich Severance for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.